Hello, writers, publishers, hustlers, connectors, brand builders, and makers. I'm Grant Faulkner, executive director of this little writing event that is coming up this November, National Novel Writing Month. And I'm sitting about 2 miles from my co-host, Brooke Warner, who is on the other side of Berkeley from me. And Brooke, I remember once when we didn't have to sit quite as far away from each other, we drove together to a writing conference and we talked a bit about our hesitation, our reluctance, and maybe even our disdain about having to market our work or ourselves online, because that's part of the work of being a published author these days. And I feel like I can't talk to a writer for more than 5 minutes without social media coming up. We've talked on past episodes about our own approaches and trepidations with it, but since we're talking with Fawzia Burke today about online marketing and how to do it effectively without wasting too much time, I've been thinking about how social media isn't just about a reluctance to self-promote, but it has changed many writers' experience of writing itself. So it's not just about the marketing, publishing part of being a writer that it's affected. It's the actual act of writing and creativity. For example, I rarely write for a stretch as long as even 30 minutes without pausing to dip into a social media site. And before social media existed or the internet existed, I'd easily sit at my desk for stretches of 2 to 3 hours and write. I didn't check the radio for news or channel surf. I just wrote. And it would have been weird to switch tasks with such frequency. But now I write, dip into social media, write, answer an email, write. And I'm curious, do you suffer from the same affliction, Brooke? Are you a social media dipper, or do you turn everything off and go deep into your writing? I was thinking about this, that we need words for this writerly trait, similar to planner, pantser, and plancer. So maybe concentrator, dipper, and flibbertigibbet.
Yeah, well, when I'm writing a book-length project, I am 100% a dipper. I like that word, actually. I like all of those. I think the issue is that some people, more than dip, they wade or luxuriate or prune to the detriment of their writing. You know, it's funny, Grant, because I remember that drive so well when we drove to the writers' conference. And I think we explicitly were talking about how we're not very good at social media. And if we were, we would have already taken a selfie and posted it on Facebook. And then we got through the entire conference and managed not to take a single photo of ourselves, of course. So that was an utter fail. And, you know, we talked about it being a good or important thing to do since we're talking about podcasting together. And then we just didn't do it, which is so like me. And I think that is my relationship to social media, that I'm like, oh, I should, but then I don't. And I have very mixed feelings about posting, especially on my personal Facebook page, more than once a day, even though sometimes I do. Yeah, so I don't know. It's complicated. How are you feeling these days about your own style or habit or addiction to social media?
Well, conflicted is the general word. And while you were saying that, I was thinking maybe we should go back and post the photo now, years later.
It would be amazing.
Yeah, some sort of a flashback to a social media promise or topic. But yeah, I've been conflicted about being a social media dipper for a while now, just because it seems like a weakness. It seems like it's better to be purely immersed in your writing. And I do believe in that kind of intensity of finding that kind of flow. Yet I realize I practice it less and less, if at all. So I'm definitely conflicted by my dipping flibbertigibbet creative style. But at the same time, I've started to grow to be more at peace with it. You know, I think about how I write, and I wake up early and I warm up to writing by scrolling through my social media feed for 5 or 10 minutes while I drink a cup of coffee. And then I'll work in a sort of staggered fashion. I'll write for 10 or 20 minutes. Pause for a few minutes to click over to a social media site, take a break for a few minutes, and then come back. And here's why I'm at peace with this and why I think it's maybe good. I've decided that I'm a mini breaker. I like to take a lot of small breaks, and it's kind of an ADHD style of writing. But I think I refresh myself in those little social media forays and come back with a little more energy. So I'd argue that I might get more done because I take those forays, not you know, because of those forays, not in spite of them. And also, I cling to this idea that distractions in proper doses can stimulate creativity, because I'm subconsciously mixing together disparate ideas or impressions. I'm not sure if that's true. And I guess everyone's different, because some people go down rabbit holes when they click over to social media just for a minute, and that minute soon becomes 30 minutes or an hour. So I'm curious what you think, Brooke. Do I sound like an addict who is rationalizing my addiction? If so, I have some more reasons I can give you to make the case for it.
Ha, yes. Well, well, I'm definitely a fan of rationalization, so please elaborate.
Well, here it is. Here's my next reason why this is good, because I don't think I'm going to change. I think one reason I like this frequent dipping style is it allows me to just see what other people are posting and to give them brief reactions or repost. And what's good about this is that I'm seeing posts about other people's writing or publishing, so I can engage in that larger conversation and participate in it. And also, it becomes just my time to give to others and not post about myself. And I might not find that in other pockets of my day. So these dips feed into both my personal and my professional life, but in small, meaningful doses that don't take too much energy. And, you know, it's sometimes I see authors who are on social media only when they have a project to talk about. So they'll essentially be off the grid for months or even years, and then suddenly they're back, which can sometimes feel a little odd, like they're not giving to others during those periods they're away. So I think if you're going to use social media as a promotional tool, you also need to use it as a giving tool and just a regular tool of conversation and connection. And I want to say, Brooke, how much I enjoy your Facebook posts. Like going back to that road trip we took to the conference, you post more frequently, I think, on Facebook. And I really think you have a really nice balance about posting really deep and meaningful things about publishing and writing, such as your recent post about the way the Times handled a book review of two memoirs, and then how you weave in the personal along with other issues you care about. So nothing ever feels forced or contrived, but that you just care about the meaning you're providing people.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate the compliment because I have a conflicted relationship with social media, but my personal Facebook page is the place where I'm probably like the most me. That's where I post about myself and my thoughts. And because I'm friends on Facebook with so many authors, I do feel really comfortable posting rants about publishing, but also posting about James's first day of distance learning, for instance. And, you know, I maintain a lot of sites. I also have a professional Facebook page, Twitter, LinkedIn, and then there's Instagram, which is the worst of all of my platforms because I barely post. But I do try to post thoughtfully, thinking about who my readership is there. You know, on those professional sites, I really exclusively post about publishing and writing. And so it's interesting, you know, to think about how you show up, like what's your persona. But on my personal Facebook page, I'm Brooke. I'm me. I talk about my kid and my girlfriend and also my publishing world. And, you know, at the same time, as much as I like it and I enjoy the conversations that oftentimes I have on social media, I'm really overwhelmed by it. And I think that's what I constantly come back to is I'm not a person who's going to not be there because there are too many things I like about it. But I do think that if there were no social media in my world, I would probably just have a whole lot of hours of my life back. And I wouldn't be too sad about that, in all honesty.
That would be a fascinating experiment to see what life is like without it for a sustained period of time. We're about to talk to Fazia, who has a system in her book, Online Marketing for Busy Authors, which walks us through all this. And I especially like that she focuses on making it all fun and fulfilling. So I'm looking forward to talking with her.
Yeah, me too, Grant. One of the best things about Fazia actually is that she's so upbeat and encouraging, and she genuinely wants authors to be engaged and to have fun in the process. So I'm super eager to hear her thoughts on this as well. And we will get to do that right after this short break. So Grant, regular listeners know that we love using the Great Courses Plus because Great Courses ad copy says it keeps us learning about the world, but really it's because it makes us look smart and impressive. That's what I think anyway. So what is the most smart and impressive thing you have learned from a Great Courses Plus class recently?
Yeah, I love this as a motivation just to look smart and impressive. but I'm happy to say that one of the benefits of the pandemic, my pandemic lifestyle at least, has been indulging in great courses. So here are a few moments that made me look and feel smart. I actually listened to the course that analyzed the Bible a while back, and I was able to explain the story of Abraham to a friend when we were talking about the extremities of faith. I recently got to tell my son about the history behind the novel Frankenstein, how Mary Shelley wrote it as part of a competition one night with her future husband, Percy Shelley and Lord Byron, you know, so a pretty good storytelling crowd. And then on that note, I've recently been listening to a super cool course, How Science Shapes Science Fiction, because I love this kind of intersection of science and story.
Geez. And just from that little sampling, people can tell there are so many courses to discover. And it reminds me of my college days when I would excitedly look through the catalog of available classes and consider what my next weeks and months might look like. And the only problem with the Great Courses Plus, honestly, is that there is not enough time to take all the classes that I'm interested in, not even in a pandemic. So right now I am still watching those communism versus socialism classes. But I put in my queue a class called How to Grow Anything, Food Gardening for Everyone, because I am very interested in doing more gardening from home because I'm home more and because I think it would be something that would be fun for my son and I to do.
Yeah. And you will learn what you're supposed to be doing because the experts who teach these classes are top notch in their subject matter or field. And you can watch or listen from any device, which means you could watch it outside while gardening. And I can catch a lecture while I'm cooking dinner. And I even sometimes just listen to Great Courses without watching while I'm walking around my neighborhood with my dog Buster.
Yeah. And it's the perfect service for listeners of Right Minded, because I know our listeners are curious and they're lifelong learners. So all of you out there, do not wait. Now is the perfect time to sign up. Start exploring with your free month trial today. And you just go to our special URL. So Grant, it's your time to roll out the special URL this time.
I kept waiting you for to sing this in verse, but I wish I could, but I'm not going to. I'll take the Great Courses singing course and maybe do it later. But the URL is thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Rightminded, all one word, no hyphen. So remember, that's thegreatcoursesplus.com/rightminded. Check it out. Welcome back, writers. I'm excited to talk with Fawzia Burke, who is the author of Online Marketing for Busy Authors, and every author I know is busy. She's the founder and president of FSB Associates, an online book publicity firm, and she's co-founder of PubSite, a platform for building author websites. And she's also a consultant and coach for authors who need help navigating the book marketing and publicity landscape. Before starting FSB, she worked for book publishers Henry Holt and John Wiley, and she has promoted books by some authors I bet you've heard of, such as Alan Alda, Arianna Huffington, and Deepak Chopra. Welcome, Fawzia.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. Thanks.
Absolutely. It's a treat, and it's an ongoing topic that Brooke and I like to talk about and our listeners like to learn about. I've actually had friends hire publicists, and they've experienced definite success, which is great. One friend, I was very impressed. He had his self-published book featured in museum gift shops and purchased by a local hotel chain that put the book in every room. And another friend, who is a traditionally published poet, got book reviews and is a frequent guest on radio shows as a result of having a publicist. Mm-hmm. But that said, I have to admit that I'm nervous about hiring a publicist myself, perhaps simply because of the cost. Mm-hmm. I'm nervous for my very unrich writer friends when they hire a publicist. So I'm curious, what would you tell a person like me? Why make this investment?
Well, I understand being nervous. It is a big, as I call it, a big hunk of change. And so it's, you know, it's, and there's no guarantees. So it's a scary proposition, no matter who you are, you know, even with authors with a big budget, you know, it's a big decision to make. Where do you want to spend the money? Who do you want to spend money with? So I do understand the hesitation. Of course, I wouldn't still be doing this 25 years later if I didn't think it was valuable. But the reason I think publicity is so important is because it leads to opportunities that honestly no other kind of promotion does, right? So there are ways of connecting with people, whether it's through podcasts or interviews or you're getting book reviews. The third party validation is really important. And so I think that's why people do it. You know, it's you can't buy it, you have to earn it. So it's called earned media. And that's why it's so valuable. The reason it's so expensive is because getting someone's attention, especially media's attention, especially this year, is so time consuming and labor intensive. And so publicists have to really, they're working so hard in terms of connecting, you know, who would be interested in a book, why this book, pitching that book, making sure it connects with people. So all of these things put together are really important because you can't, as I said, you can't buy it. You know, you can't buy a good review. You can't really, well, you can have sponsored posts and things like that. But in general, publicity is earned media. So it gives you a lot of validation. It gives you a lot of credibility. You build credibility through publicity.
I think it is so difficult because it isn't guaranteed. And I love how Grant put, you know, the unrich friends. Many people feel that way. And it feels hard to invest that much in yourself. And, you know, I love the work that you do. And I recommend my own authors to you. And one of the things that you're extra, I mean, you're a great publicist and marketing person, but you're also super into educating authors, which I love. And I'm wondering if you could talk about your three phases you organized your own book around, you know, correlating to the process that authors can use to build their presence and brand, because people can do that with support, but they can also begin to do it on their own.
They definitely can. And thank you for bringing that up, because I call it a formula, and I use it basically with my authors who just are feeling so overwhelmed, because everyone they talk to has some advice for them, right? And it's all coming at them at the same intensity. So they think everything has to be done at the same time, you know, at the same speed. So I try to break it up for them so they feel a little bit in control. And my little formula is design plus engagement plus visibility equals marketing success. And so what I do is I just try to break it down for them and tell them, okay, we're in design phase right now, right? So we don't have to worry about deciding on a publicity campaign. Let's just make sure we've set up our shop. So we want to make sure we have a website that is mobile friendly, has links to booksellers, is fast. Let's make sure we have a mailing list because it's such an important asset. Let's make sure we have decided what we want to do about social media. So all of those things put together, sort of the design phase, just how we look online, what our photo looks like, all of those kinds of things. So we do that first. And then the second stage is engagement, which is whether it's blogging or video or, you know, social media posts or whatever, how are you engaging with your readers? What is your communication method? What are the types of things you're talking about? We kind of create editorial calendars and, you know, I talk them through all of the different things that they could talk about, because I know most authors come to me and they go, I don't know what to say. You know, I don't know what to talk about. I don't know what to blog about. So we kind of break all that down, create a plan for the engagement. And then on top of that, we build visibility. And visibility is publicity, advertising, you know, those kinds of things that actually create exposure for your book. But the thing that people don't recognize, and this might go back to Grant's question too, is that publicity by itself is not going to be as successful if you have not done the phase one and phase two. So if you don't have a website, if you are not connected with people on at some social media, it doesn't have to be everything. It needs to be maybe one platform, two platforms, but you've got to be out there connecting with people. So publicity by itself is not going to be as effective unless you do these things too. So before you spend money on publicity and advertising, there's all these other things that you can do yourself, which is sort of called owned media, right? So it's not earned, it's owned, you own it. So you want to make sure that you create enough exposure and your brand. So when you do spend the money, it's actually much more effective.
You've said, I've read this quote, having visibility online is not just about selling a book, it's about building a career. I'm very interested in that. And so I was wondering if you can tell us what the difference is between selling a book versus building a career. And you just mentioned the notion of personal brand. So I was wondering if that ties into this and what a personal brand is for those people who don't know.
So in my opinion, a lot of authors think that, you know, they just have to show up online when they have something to sell. So whether it's a book and they're trying to do, you know, just a promotion around the book, and then they show up online and then they can disappear, right? That's sort of like the idea. And in my opinion, marketing is really sort of longer thread. You really have to think about, okay, what does the launch look like? But then what do we do after the launch? You know, what do we do after 6 months of launch? There needs to be a thread of exposure and marketing that you're doing much more long term. And the thing to remember is that, you know, yesterday you have a book that you might be promoting, but you might have a play, or you might start a podcast, or you might do an ebook, or you might do other things. So you can't just go from 0 to 100 to 0 to 100. That would be exhausting for anybody. So think of the engagement with people as a connection for your whole career, not just for promoting one thing, but just, you know, whatever you do next. So just bring people along with you on your career, on your journey. And I think that works a lot better for authors too, because it feels more authentic. They don't feel like they're on a sales pitch all the time. So I think that's really important. And as far as how it connects to your personal brand is that, you know, as I said before, publicity is earned media. You can't buy it. You have to earn it because your book is really wonderful and people want to review it. But you also have owned media, and owned media is things you have yourself. So that's your brand, right? Your website, your mailing list, your own social media, your own podcast. However you are creating content for yourself, that's considered owned media, which means you can control the messaging, you can control the timing, you can decide what you want to say, you can switch ideas if you want to. So those are the types of things that I think of is when you're building a brand, you're building it for your whole career. You're not building it just for the launch of a book. But if you build it, then when you do have a launch of a book, you're actually in a much better position to promote it.
Yeah, that's so important, Fawzia. Thank you for that. And I read this quote by you that said, in my 20 years of promoting books online, I have worked with best-selling authors, celebrity authors, longtime authors, first-time authors, and some self-published authors. While the challenges may differ from book to book, all authors have a similar concern, how to spend their time effectively promoting their book and expanding their brands online while writing the best possible book. It's such a great quote, so important. Can you tell us how authors should figure out where to start and how to spend their time online? Like, what's a must do and what's a might do?
Yeah, that's such an important thing because you're absolutely right. So many authors just really struggle with this because it's also different hats. You know, the writing hat is a completely different kind of exercise that makes you feel like you're really digging deep into your soul to bring something out, to write something, to work on it. It's very solitary work. And then you have to switch gears and become very social, which is not always common to authors. And so it's a very different kind of energy as well. And so I think for authors to, you know, to use it, I think the best thing to do is actually set some time, like a schedule, and say, okay, I'm for half an hour in the morning or half an hour in the evening. When I don't feel like writing, how can I use that energy? So really kind of tapping into that energy. I always tell people not to waste a zone. You know, if you're in the zone for writing, you do not want to distract yourself. You know, stick with your zone. But as far as marketing is concerned, is obviously, you know, not doing it is not an option. It's something that's really important. So in my opinion, an author has to have a website. Absolutely, positively. Facebook is not enough. An author publisher website is not enough. You need to have a website of your own. So I think that's something that they have to focus on because you want to make sure that you can control it. You can add content. You can blog on it. You can bring traffic to it. So that's absolutely must have. The second thing that's must have, in my opinion, is a mailing list. It takes really long to grow it and to sort of nurture it, but it's so useful. You know, people who sign up for your mailing list are much more likely to buy your book than people on social media. I get asked about social media all the time. I'm sure you do too, Brooke. It's just a sexy topic, but to be honest with you, it's not where people will be buying your book. It's a place where people might get to know you better, might like you. And that's the purpose of it, in my opinion. But the sale pitch is really kind of made on your website and on your mailing list. So I think those two things, in my opinion, are really, really important. But then people ask me all the time, well, okay, if I have a mailing list, what do I do with it? So you do need to write some content. And I would say, blogging is another good idea for you to blog on your website because it brings traffic to your website. It gives you something to post on social media. It gives you something to post on your newsletter. So those are the kinds of things that I think are really important. And I feel like those are easier for authors than just go out there and do social media and do Facebook Live. And all of those kinds of things are harder for them. So I think if we focus on the things that make sense and are comfortable for you, that's really important. But every author is different. You know, you want to make sure that you're tapping into your skill set and your interests.
Yeah, that's interesting, Fawzia, that you bring up where do people buy your book. And I think that's why authors tend to place a lot of importance on book reviews as a place mm-hmm. where people perhaps buy your book, or it's the step before that. But there are a lot of books out there and a lot of competition for scarce space.
Yes.
So what are your recommendations to get a book reviewed? And then, you know, do book reviews even really matter for book sales these days? Am I right in that?
Yeah. So I think that's actually a really important question because authors love getting book reviews. And I think for sometimes, you know, when I'm working as a publicist and I get a review for an author and it's not great, you know, we call it sort of a lukewarm review. You know, we're always sort of cringing because we think, oh my God, if the author's going to be okay with that. And some of them are really great because they use it as a, you know, sort of like a way to improve their writing. So they use it constructively. As far as a sales tool, it depends, right? There are certain people that swear by a review in the New York Times, and that's really important to them, versus other people who really look at reviews on Amazon. And that's more important to them than a review in the New York Times, as believe it or not, there's actually been studies on that. So I think reviews are really important, even to this date. You can't think one review is going to lead to, you know, a bestseller list, but it does validate the choice. So if people see that other people are enjoying that book, they're more likely to want to use it as well. So I think that book reviews are important for that reason, that they build credibility. They, you know, people kind of judge a book, not just by its cover, but actually by the reviews that it's getting.
In closing, I'm curious, what's the biggest surprise you've seen in online marketing in the last year or so, or just the most creative use of it? I see so many authors getting really creative when it comes to marketing their books.
Yeah, I think especially right now, I know it's such a crazy time with COVID and people being indoors and stuff. I think there was that pause in the beginning when everybody was sort of like, I don't know what to do. And now everybody's sort of figuring things out. I'm loving these online events. You know, I think whether it's the book launches or and what you know, we're figuring out technology, too. So some of them are Zoom events and some of them are, you know, Facebook Live events and their podcasts and all that kind of stuff that people are doing. I am just loving that. I think that's been really exciting to see how people are embracing that. You know, I've seen so many authors who've done these really amazing launch events, you know, where there's one of my clients actually did, you know, there was song and there was poetry and there was like she read from the book and then someone else read from the book. It was all so exciting. And I think that's probably one of the things that I'm finding really exciting right now is how people are using the technology to create these events that honestly could not be replicated in person. So it's not like we started off with just replicating or trying to do things online that we could have done in person. But now I think we've taken it to a whole new level. People are doing things. They've got people from different countries joining their Zoom meetings and contributing. And I just love it. I'm excited. I just, you know, I've always been excited, of course, about internet publicity and how people use the internet to connect with their readers. And I think this year it's growing exponentially. And I just love it. I love the energy of it. So that's probably my favorite part.
Fozzie, I've heard of authors literally doing readings to their pets instead of to the
audience. I love it.
That's one I'm particularly charmed by.
I love it.
And I was going to say, I love that you're putting such a positive spin on this because so much of the pandemic feels so hard. And yet there are really amazing and quantifiable positive things that are coming out of it for authors. So thanks for that.
Absolutely. Yeah, I really think it's been an amazingly creative time for authors. There was definitely a time where a lot of authors felt hesitant to even move forward, didn't know what to do, how to do it. And now I feel like we're all in it together and I'm really seeing such vibrancy and excitement. And so I'm excited. I'm excited for our future for sure.
Thanks so much for joining us, Fozzie. This was wonderful.
Thank you so much for your interest and for having me. I really appreciate it.
We will be right back with today's book talk.
All right, everybody, we're back and we're choosing our book talk picks. And I am choosing Be the Gateway, A Practical Guide to Sharing Your Creative Work and Engaging an Audience, which is by Dan Blank. And Dan was a guest not too long ago. One of the things that I most love about Dan is his heart-centered marketing. And it's just so meaningful right now, because I know our audience has a lot of trepidation around marketing because it can feel like you're selling something or it can feel false. And Dan's whole thing is about the creative process doesn't have to be separate from the marketing process, that the marketing process, in fact, does have a creative energy. And when you really believe in your work, then selling is authentic. So I can't recommend this book enough. I think Be the Gateway is something that can show you how to enjoy marketing with joy and confidence, as he says. And so, if you're feeling nervous about marketing in general, check out this one. And everybody, Right Minded is a weekly podcast still. We're in year 3 now officially, and we're still available wherever you get your podcasts. And we hope that you'll help us out as we enter year 3 by sharing with a friend, giving us a rating. Subscribing is always super helpful. And we'll see you next week, like we do every week. Thank you.